Hello and welcome back to Nudie Reads, a classic podcast for my mother. She read to me when I was little, so now I'm returning the favour and you're welcome to listen along. It's Sunday and that means I'm reading a classic. Thursdays are for offbeat stuff, but whatever I'm reading, it's always great writing. Tonight, we are in the medieval world, the end of the 13th century and the start of the 14th, for the famous book Il Milione, better known as The Travels of Marco Polo, as told to Rustichello of Pisa, written first in 1299. It is the world's first detailed travel log book, and the book by which medieval and Renaissance Europe understood Asia. Not bad for a jail story, but more on that angle in a minute. The Travels of Marco Polo was a huge hit when it first came into the world, written by hand and hand-bound in 1299 or thereabouts, because remember, Johannes Gutenberg and his printing press were 150 years into the future. Marco Polo's book would have to stay popular and relevant for 150 more years until 1450, when Gutenberg's printing revolution could make it a worldwide hit, which it has remained to this day in 2022 and doubtless will continue to be so because it is such a rollicking read. Before I get to reading, a bit about Marco Polo and his family. Marco Polo was born in Venice, the son of Venetian traders. His father, Niccolo Polo, and his uncle, Niccolo's brother, Maffeo Polo, had already established links in the 1260s to the overlord of all Mongol rulers, Kublai Khan, the grandson of Genghis Khan. Kublai Khan was Khan of the Golden Horde. That's the span from Ukraine and Western Russia and Crimea as we know them today, Mongolia itself and the regions of southern Russia, Iran, Afghanistan, Kashmir and China. Kublai Khan hadn't met any Europeans before the Polo brothers, but he liked them and he was intrigued by their tales of the papacy and Christianity. He asked them to get the Pope to send him 100 intelligent men skilled in the seven arts. That's grammar, logic, rhetoric, arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy, as well as some oil from the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. So Niccolo and Maffeo returned to Venice, where they collected then 17-year-old Marco. And in 1271, they took him along for their second trip along the Silk Road to get back to China, where Kublai Khan had his summer palace at Xanadu. You may know the Samuel Taylor Coleridge poem. In Xanadu did Kublai Khan a stately pleasure dome decree. Coleridge wrote his famous poem of Kublai Khan and Xanadu right at the end of the 18th century. And he had been moved by tonight's book, which was by then almost 500 years old. You know who else really loved tonight's book? Christopher Columbus. And indeed anyone after 1299 who was travelling east of Europe, or who was at least interested to know about that part of the world and what things were like east of Europe. To get back to the Polo boys, Father Niccolo, Uncle Maffeo and young Marco had the oil from Jerusalem and letters from the Pope, but they didn't have the 100 men, intelligent or otherwise, with them. It was just them. And off they went in 1271 on their way to Xanadu and Kublai Khan. Marco was as popular with the Khan as his dad and his uncle, maybe even more so, because Kublai Khan made him a kind of diplomat for the Mongol Empire. And Marco Polo saw not only the Silk Road and China, with all the diversity that obviously covered, But he also saw Vietnam, Japan, Indonesia, Sri Lanka. Can you imagine how exciting his book must have been when it became available? These places were unknown to the vast bulk of Europeans. A few diplomats here and there had travelled to China before Marco Polo, but they'd never written about it. They just weren't in Marco Polo's class. So how is the travels of Marco Polo a jail story if Marco Polo is so classy? Well, when Marco Polo finally returned to Venice in 1295, after being away the entire 24 years, he found Venice at war with Genoa. And being a good Venetian boy, he of course got involved in some anti-Genoa action, and the Genoese caught him and they threw him into the clink. In his cell, he found Rustichello of Pisa. Rustichello was a good Pisan boy, and when Pisa was at war with Genoa, he got involved in some anti-Genoa action of his own, and the Genoese caught him and threw him into the clink. The two men found themselves in jail together with nothing better to do than talk and listen. It was a very happy meeting in a very dire place, and it changed the world. Because when they were freed, the two men immediately set to work writing The Travels of Marco Polo. It is divided into four parts called books. Book one is about the Middle East and Central Asia on the way to China and Kublai Khan. Book two is about China and Kublai Khan. Book three is about Japan, India, Sri Lanka, and Southeast Asia. And book four is about the wars of the Mongols in Russia. The book was copied and translated right away because Marco Polo was a genial, tolerant, and observant diplomatic type of man. He describes what he saw. There's no negative judgments. It's just a proper travelogue and a delight to enjoy even today, 720-odd years later. I am reading from a charming edition prepared by Henry Yule in 1903, which Yule dedicated to Her Royal Highness Margherita, Princess of Piedmont. This endeavour to illustrate the life and work of a renowned Italian. It is a fantastic addition for all the effort that Yule and his team goes into to explain the history of the Polo family, with detail and drawings and even photos of Venice to help set the scene, and incredibly helpful footnotes throughout to help you navigate Marco Polo's incredible observations. I can't recommend the Yule edition highly enough, so I'm reading you the prologue to Book One. This will give you a sense of the wonder and delight of this smash-hit bestseller travel book from the 13th century. Let's begin. It came to pass in the year of Christ 1260, when Baldwin was reigning at Constantinople, that Messer Nicholas Polo, the father of my lord Mark, and Messer Maffeo Polo, the brother of Messer Nicholas, were at the said city of Constantinople, whither they had gone from Venice, with their merchants' wares. Now these two brethren, men singularly noble, wise, and provident, took counsel together to cross the greater sea on a venture of trade. So they laid in a store of jewels, and set forth from Constantinople, crossing the sea to Soldaia. How the two brothers went on beyond Soldaia. Having stayed a while at Soldaia, they considered the matter and thought it well to extend their journey further. So they set forth from Soldaia and travelled till they came to the court of a certain Tatar prince, Barka Khan by name, whose residences were at Sara and at Bolgara, and who was esteemed one of the most liberal and courteous princes that ever was among the Tatars. This Barka was so delighted at the arrival of the two brothers, and treated them with great honour, so they presented to him the whole of the jewels that they had brought with them. The prince was highly pleased with these, and accepted the offering most graciously, causing the brothers to receive at least twice its value. After they had spent a 12-month at the court of this prince, there broke out a great war between Barka and Alaou, the lord of the Tartars of the Levant, and great hosts were mustered on either side. But in the end, Barka, the lord of the Tartars of the Ponent, was defeated, though on both sides there was great slaughter, and by reason of this war, no one could travel without peril of being taken. Thus it was at least on the road by which the brothers had come, though there was no obstacle to their travelling forward. So the brothers, finding that they could not retrace their steps, determined to go forward. Quitting Bolgara, therefore, they proceeded to a city called Ukaka, which was at the extremity of the kingdom of the Lord of the Ponent. And thence, departing again and passing the great river Tigris, they travelled across a desert which extended for 17 days' journey, and wherein they found neither town nor village, falling in only with the tents of Tartars occupied with their cattle at pasture. How the two brothers, after crossing a desert, came to the city of Bokhara and fell in with certain envoys there. After they had passed the desert, they arrived at a very great and noble city called Bokhara, the territory of which belonged to a king whose name was Barak and is also called Bokhara. The city is the best in all Persia, and when they had got thither, they found they could neither proceed further forward nor yet turn back again. Wherefore they abode in that city of Bokhara for 3 years. And whilst they were sojourning in that city, there came from Alaou, lord of the Levant, envoys on their way to the court of the great Khan, the lord of all the Tartars in the world. And when the envoys beheld the two brothers, they were amazed, for they had never before seen Latins in that part of the world. And they said to the brothers, "Gentlemen, if ye will take our counsel, ye will find great honour and profit shall come thereof." So they replied that they would be right glad to learn how. "In truth," said the envoys, "the great Khan hath never seen any Latins, and he hath a great desire to do so. Wherefore, if you will keep us company to his court, ye may depend upon it that he will be right glad to see you, and will treat you with great honour and liberality. Whilst in our company ye shall travel with perfect security, and need fear to be molested by nobody." How the two brothers took the envoy's counsel and went to the court of the great Khan. So when the two brothers had made their arrangements, they set out on their travels in company with the envoys and journeyed for a whole year, going northward and northeastward, before they reached the court of that prince. And on their journey they saw many marvels of diverse and sundry kinds. But of these we shall say nothing at present, because Messer Mark, who has likewise seen them all, will give you a full account of them in the book which follows. How the two brothers arrived at the court of the great Khan. When the two brothers got to the great Khan, he received them with great honour and hospitality, and showed much pleasure at their visit, asking them a number of questions. First, he asked about the emperors, how they maintained their dignity and administered justice in their dominions, and how they went forth to battle and so forth. And then he asked the like questions about the kings and princes and other potentates. How the great Khan asked all about the manners of the Christians and particularly about the Pope of Rome. And then he inquired about the Pope and the Church and about all that is done at Rome and all the customs of the Latins. And the two brothers told him the truth in all its particulars, with order and good sense, like sensible men as they were. And this they were able to do as they knew the Tartar language well. How the great Khan sent the two brothers as his envoys to the Pope. When that prince, whose name was Kublai Khan, lord of the Tatars all over the earth, and of all the kingdoms and provinces and territories of that vast quarter of the world, had heard all that the brothers had to tell him about the ways of the Latins, he was greatly pleased, and he took it into his head that he would send them on an embassy to the Pope. So he urgently desired them to undertake this mission along with one of his barons, and they replied that they would gladly execute all his commands as those of their sovereign lord. Then the prince sent to summon to his presence one of his barons, whose name was Cogatal, and desired him to get ready, for it was proposed to send him to the Pope along with the two brothers. The baron replied that he would execute the lord's commands to the best of his ability. After this, the prince caused letters from himself to the Pope to be translated in the Tatar tongue, and committed them to the two brothers and to that baron of his own, and charged them with what he wished them to say to the new Pope. Now the contents of the letter were to this purport. He begged that the Pope would send as many as 100 persons of our Christian faith, intelligent men, acquainted with the seven arts, well qualified to enter into controversy, and able clearly to prove by force of argument to idolaters and other kinds of folk, that the law of Christ was best, and that all other religions were false and naught, and that if they would prove this, he and all under him would become Christians, and the church's liegemen. Finally, he charged his envoys to bring back to him some oil of the lamp which burns on the sepulchre of our Lord at Jerusalem. How the great Khan gave them a tablet of gold bearing his orders in their behalf. When the prince had charged them with all his commission, he caused to be given to them a tablet of gold, on which was inscribed that the three ambassadors should be supplied with everything needful in all the countries through which they should pass, with horses, with escorts, and in short, with whatever they should require. And when they had made all needful preparations, the three ambassadors took their leave of the emperor and set out. When they had travelled I know not how many days, the Tatar baron fell sick, so that he could not ride, and being very ill and unable to proceed further, he halted at a certain city. So the two brothers judged it best that they should leave him behind and proceed to carry out their commission, and as he was well content that they should do so, they continued their journey. And I can assure you that whithersoever they went, they were honourably provided with whatever they stood in need of or chose to command. And this was owing to that tablet of authority from the Lord, which they carried with them. So they travelled on and on until they arrived at Laios in Hermania, a journey which occupied them, I assure you, for 3 years. It took them so long because they could not always proceed, being stopped sometimes by snow, or by heavy rains falling, or by great torrents which they found in an impassable state. How the two brothers came to the city of Acre. They departed from Laios and came to Acre, arriving there in the month of April, in the year of Christ, 1269, and then they learned that the Pope was dead. And when they found that the Pope was dead, they went to a certain wise churchman who was legate for the whole kingdom of Egypt and a man of great authority, by name Theobald of Piacenza, and told him of the mission on which they were come. When the legate heard their story, he was greatly surprised and deemed the thing to be a great honour and advantage for the whole of Christendom. So his answer to the two ambassador brothers was this: "Gentlemen, you see that the Pope is dead, wherefore ye must needs have patience until a new Pope be made, and then shall ye be able to execute your charge." Seeing well enough that what the legate said was just, they observed, "But while the Pope is a-making, we may as well go to Venice and visit our households." So they departed from Acre, and went to Negropont, and from Negropont they continued their voyage to Venice. On their arrival there, Messer Nicholas found that his wife was dead, and that she had left behind her a son of 15 years of age, whose name was Marco, and 'tis of him that this book tells. The two brothers abode at Venice a couple of years, tarrying until a pope should be made. How the two brothers again departed from Venice on their way back to the great Khan, and took with them Mark, the son of Messer Nicholas. When the two brothers had tarried as long as I have told you, and saw that never a pope was made, they said that their return to the great Khan must be put off no longer. So they set out from Venice, taking Mark along with them, and went straight back to Acre, where they found the legate of whom we have spoken. They had a good deal of discourse with him concerning the matter, and asked his permission to go to Jerusalem to get some oil from the lamp on the sepulchre, to carry with them to the great Khan, as he had enjoined. The legate giving them leave, they went from Acre to Jerusalem and got some of the oil, and then returned to Acre and went to the legate and said to him, "As we see no sign of a pope's being made, we desire to return to the great Khan, for we have already tarried long, and there has been more than enough delay." To which the legate replied, "Since it is your wish to go back, I am well content." Wherefore he caused letters to be written for delivery to the great Khan, bearing testimony that the two brothers had come in all good faith to accomplish his charge, but that as there was no pope, they had been unable to do so. How the two brothers set out from Acre, and Mark along with them. When the two brothers had received the legate's letters, they set forth from Acre to return to the Grand Khan, and got as far as Laos. But shortly after their arrival there, they had news that the legate aforesaid was chosen pope, taking the name of Pope Gregory of Piacenza, news which the two brothers were very glad indeed to hear. And presently there reached them at Laos a message from the legate, now the pope, desiring them on the part of the Apostolic See not to proceed further on their journey, but to return to him incontinently. And what shall I tell you? The king of Hermania caused a galley to be got ready for the two ambassador brothers, and dispatched them to the pope at Acre. How the two brothers presented themselves before the new pope. And when they had been thus honourably conducted to Acre, they proceeded to the presence of the pope, and paid their respects to him with humble reverence. He received them with great honour and satisfaction, and gave them his blessing. He then appointed two friars of the order of preachers to accompany them to the great Khan, and to do whatever might be required of them. These were unquestionably as learned churchmen as were to be found in the province at that day, one being called Friar Nicholas of Vicenza, and the other Friar William of Tripoli. He delivered to them also proper credentials and letters in reply to the great Khan's messages, and gave them authority to ordain priests and bishops, and to bestow every kind of absolution, as if given by himself in proper person, sending by them also many fine vessels of crystal as presents to the great Khan. So when they had got all that was needful, they took leave of the pope, receiving his benediction, and the four set out together from Acre and went to Laos, accompanied always by Messer Nicholas's son, Marco. Now, about the time that they had reached Laos, Ben-Dokwedar, the Soldan of Babylon, invaded Hermania with a great host of Saracens and ravaged the country, so that our envoys ran a great peril of being taken or slain. And when the preaching friars saw this, they were greatly frightened and said that go they never would. So they made over to Messer Nicholas and Messer Maffeo all their credentials and documents, and took their leave, departing in company with the master of the temple. How Messer Niccolò and Messer Maffeo Polo and Marco presented themselves before the Great Khan. And what shall I tell you? When the two brothers and Mark had arrived at that great city, they went to the imperial palace, and there they found the sovereign, attended by a great company of barons. So they bent the knee before him and paid their respects to him with all possible reverence, prostrating themselves on the ground. Then the Lord bade them stand up and treated them with great honour, showing great pleasure at their coming, and asked many questions as to their welfare and how they had sped. They replied that they had in verity sped well, seeing that they found the Khan well and safe. Then they presented the credentials and letters which they had received from the Pope, which pleased him right well, and after that they produced the oil from the sepulchre. And at that also he was very glad, for he set great store thereby. And next, spying Mark, who was then a young gallant, he asked who was that in their company. "Sire," said his father, Messer Niccolò, "'tis my son and your liegeman." "Welcome he is too," quoth the emperor. And why should I make a long story? There was great rejoicing at the court because of their arrival, and they met with attention and honour from everybody. So there they abode, at the court, with the other barons. How the Emperor sent Mark on an embassy of his. Now it came to pass that Marco, the son of Messer Niccolò, sped wondrously in learning the customs of the Tartars, as well as their language, their manner of writing and their practice of war. In fact, he came in brief space to know several languages and four sundry written characters. And he was discreet and prudent in every way, insomuch that the emperor held him in great esteem. And so, when he discerned Mark to have so much sense and to conduct himself so well and beseemingly, he sent him on an embassage of his, to a country which was a good 6 months' journey distant. The young gallant executed his commission well and with discretion. Now, he had taken note on several occasions that when the prince's ambassadors returned from different parts of the world, they were able to tell him about nothing except the business on which they had gone, and that the prince, in consequence, held them for no better than fools or dolts, and would say, "I had far livelier hearken about the strange things and the manners of the different countries you have seen than merely be told of the business you went upon." For he took great delight in hearing of the affairs of strange countries. Mark, therefore, as he went and returned, took great pains to learn about all kinds of different matters in the countries which he visited, in order to be able to tell about them to the Great Khan. How Mark returned from the mission whereon he had been sent. When Mark returned from his ambassage, he presented himself before the emperor, and after making his report of the business with which he was charged and its successful accomplishment, he went on to give an account in a pleasant and intelligent manner of all the novelties and strange things that he had seen and heard, insomuch that the emperor and all such as heard his story were surprised, and said, "If this young man live, he will assuredly come to be a person of great worth and ability." And so, from that time forward, he was always entitled Messer Marco Polo, and thus we shall style him henceforth in this book of ours, as is but right. Thereafter, Messer Marco abode in the Khan's employment some 17 years, continually going and coming, hither and thither, on the missions that were entrusted to him by the Lord, and sometimes, with the permission and authority of the Great Khan, on his own private affairs. And as he knew all the sovereign's ways, like a sensible man he always took such pains to gather knowledge of anything that would be likely to interest him. And then on his return to court, he would relate everything in regular order, and thus the emperor came to hold him in great love and favour. and for this reason alone he would employ him the oftener on the most weighty and most distant of his missions. These Messer Marco ever carried out with discretion and success, God be thanked. So the emperor became ever more partial to him, and treated him with the greater distinction, and kept him so close to his person that some of the barons waxed very envious thereat. And thus it came about that Messer Marco Polo had knowledge of, or had actually visited, a greater number of the different countries of the world than any other man, the more that he was always giving his mind to get knowledge and to spy out and inquire into everything, in order to have matter to relate to the Lord. How Messer Niccolo, Messer Maffeo, and Messer Marco asked leave of the great Khan to go their way. When the two brothers and Mark had abode with the Lord all that time that you have been told, having meanwhile acquired great wealth in jewels and gold, they began among themselves to have thoughts about returning to their own country, and indeed it was time. For, to say nothing of the length and infinite perils of the way, when they considered the Khan's great age, they doubted whether, in the event of his death before their departure, they would ever be able to get home. They applied to him several times for leave to go, presenting their request with great respect, but he had such a partiality for them, and liked them so much to have them about him, that nothing on earth would persuade him to let them go. Now it came to pass in those days that the Queen Bolgana, wife of Argon, Lord of the Levant, departed this life, and in her will she had desired that no lady should take her place or succeed her as Argon's wife, except one of her own family, which existed in Cathay. Argon therefore dispatched three of his barons, by name respectively, Ulate, Apuska, and Koja, as ambassadors to the great Khan, attended by a very gallant company, in order to bring back as his bride a lady of the family of Queen Bolgana, his late wife. When these three barons had reached the court of the great Khan, they delivered their message, explaining wherefore they were come. The Khan received them with all honour and hospitality, and then sent for a lady, whose name was Kokashin, who was of the family of the deceased Queen Bolgana. She was a maiden of 17, a very beautiful and charming person, and on her arrival at court she was presented to the three barons as the lady chosen in compliance with their demand. They declared that the lady pleased them well. Meanwhile, Messer Marco chanced to return from India, whither he had gone as the Lord's ambassador, and made his report of all the different things that he had seen in his travels, and of the sundry seas over which he had voyaged. And the three barons, having seen that Messer Niccolo, Messer Maffeo, and Messer Marco were not only Latins, but men of marvellous good sense withal, took thought among themselves to get the three to travel with them, their intention being to return to their country by sea, on account of the great fatigue of that long land journey for a lady. And the ambassadors were the more desirous to have their company, as being aware that those three had great knowledge and experience of the Indian Sea and the countries by which they would have to pass, and especially Messer Marco. So they went to the great Khan and begged as a favour that he would send the three Latins with them, as it was their desire to return home by sea. The Lord, having that great regard that I have mentioned for those three Latins, was very loath to do so, and his countenance showed great dissatisfaction. But at last he did give them permission to depart, enjoining them to accompany the three barons and the lady. How the two brothers and Messer Marco took leave of the great Khan and returned to their own country. And when the prince saw that the two brothers and Messer Marco were ready to set forth, he called them all three to his presence and gave them two golden tablets of authority, which should secure them liberty of passage through all his dominions, and by means of which, whithersoever they should go, all necessaries would be provided for them, and for all their company, and whatever they might choose to order. He charged them also with messages to the King of France, the King of England, the King of Spain, and the other kings of Christendom. He then caused 13 ships to be equipped, each of which had 4 masts, and often spread 12 sails. And I could easily give you all particulars about these, but as it would be so long an affair, I will not enter upon this now, but hereafter, when time and place are suitable. Among the said ships were at least 4 or 5 that carried crews of 250 or 260 men. And when the ships had been equipped, the 3 barons and the lady and the 2 brothers and Messer Marco took leave of the great Khan, and went on board their ships with a great company of people, and with all necessaries provided for 2 years by the emperor. They put forth to sea, and after sailing for some 3 months, they arrived at a certain island towards the south, which is called Java, and in which there are many wonderful things, which we shall tell you about by and by. Quitting this island, they continued to navigate the Sea of India for 18 months more before they arrived whither they were bound, meeting on their way also with many marvels, of which we shall tell hereafter. And when they got thither, they found that Argon was dead. So the lady was delivered to Kassan, his son. But I should have told you that it is a fact that when they embarked, they were in number some 600 persons, without counting the mariners, but nearly all died by the way, so that only 8 survived. The sovereignty when they arrived was held by Kiakatu, so they commended the lady to him and executed all their commission. And when the 2 brothers and Messer Marco had executed their charge in full and done all that the great Khan had enjoined on them in regard to the lady, they took their leave and set out upon their journey. And before their departure, Kiakatu gave them 4 golden tablets of authority, 2 of which bore gerfalcons, 1 bore lions, whilst the 4th was plain, and having on them inscriptions which directed that the 3 ambassadors should receive honour and all provisions, and everything necessary should be supplied to them. And so they found, in fact, for throughout the country they received ample and excellent supplies of everything needful, and many a time indeed, as I may tell you, they were furnished with 200 horsemen, more or less, to escort them on their way in safety. And this was all the more needful, because Kiakatu was not the legitimate lord, and therefore the people had less scruple to do mischief than if they had had a lawful prince. Another thing, too, must be mentioned, which does credit to those 3 ambassadors, and shows for what great personages they were held. The great Khan regarded them with such trust and affection that he had confided to their charge the Queen Kokoshin, as well as the daughter of the King of Manzi, to conduct to Argon, the Lord of all the Levant. And those 2 great ladies, who were thus entrusted to them, they watched over and guarded as if they had been daughters of their own, until they had transferred them to the hands of their lord. Whilst the ladies, young and fair as they were, looked on each of those 3 as a father and obeyed them accordingly. Indeed, both Kassan, who is now the reigning prince, and the Queen Kokoshin, his wife, have such a regard for the envoys that there is nothing they would not do for them. And when the 3 ambassadors took leave of that lady to return to their own country, she wept for sorrow at the parting. What more shall I say? Having left Kiakatu, they travelled day by day till they came to Trebizond, and thence to Constantinople, from Constantinople to Negropont, and from Negropont to Venice. And this was in the year 1295 of Christ's incarnation. And now that I have rehearsed all the prologue, as you have heard, we shall begin the book of the description of the diverse things that Messer Marco met with in his travels. And that's where we'll leave it tonight. Isn't it delightful? It reads like a romantic tale of doing do, because Rustichello of Pisa wrote romances, and he was particularly taken with Arthurian legend from England. I think you get a sense of how exciting the tales of Marco Polo would have been as a book in the 13th century, and how charming you will find it in 2022. I think the writing is lyrical, but it's the actual story that is super fun. What a wonderful life Marco Polo lived, and thank goodness he got banged up in jail and got along with his jail buddy. Imagine if they had had a falling out instead. I think the world would have been a very different and poorer place. Plainly, Marco Polo could make friends with anyone, the perfect diplomat, and a wonderfully observant traveller. Right, that's your lot. I'll be back on Thursday, 9 p.m. Sydney time, with something offbeat, and I wish you all a great and safe week wherever you are. Do please follow on Spotify if that's where you're listening, and if you're an Apple listener, 5 stars or a nice review would be most welcome. It really helps the pod to grow. And a very quick mirëse ardhje to new listeners in Albania, which happens to be where Australia's new Prime Minister, as of last night, hails. Welcome, new listeners. There's lots of episodes for you to enjoy. I'm so pleased you've joined the Nudie Reads crew. Okay, till next time then, everyone, take care. It's slippery out there, and thanks for listening to Nudie Reads.